Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. As usual, we start with the good. And, Jim, what a difference a few hours makes. Yesterday's bad martini was us wondering whether Benjamin Netanyahu was completely desperate because less than 24 hours before the polls opened in the Israeli parliamentary elections, he shifted positions and no longer favored a two-state solution and said if reelected, he would vigorously oppose the creation of a Palestinian state. I said that that smacked of someone who is not confident of victory. And while you agreed, you also added this gem.
Basically, in the last 48 hours of an election, anybody will say anything if they think it will help them get elected.
And that is exactly what happened. Not only did Likud get the most seats in parliament, it looks like they'll be able to forge a more conservative coalition than they had in the current government. So great news for Bibi, horrible news for Obama, and probably good news for those who want to stop Iran from getting a nuke.
Yeah, I was going to say, look, not too much egg on your face or my similar assessment yesterday, because look, this is what the polls were telling us. This is what the exit polls even yesterday were pointing to, a very close finish. And then you end up, and there's a reason they actually count the votes. Sometimes even the exit polls can be off. And before people start looking for various, you know, conspiratorial beliefs of somebody cooking the books on the exit polls or something, usually what it is, and I'm thinking back to the 2004 example when the exit polls had Kerry winning significantly. Back then, they had very cute women who were doing the exit polls. And the guys kind of figured, ah, cute college-age women. Yes, of course I voted for John Kerry. I'm very progressive. Now, what are you doing tonight? That was kind of the general impression that the people doing the exit polls can kind of consciously or unconsciously sway the response of people. It's not actually the actual votes that they're counting there. So the short version is, no, Bibi Netanyahu did much better than expected. And while this doesn't, you know, solve all the problems in the region. You and I had said yesterday that a Netanyahu defeat would be seen as, one, a very big victory for the Obama administration, which has made its views on Netanyahu very clear. It would be seen as certainly a good sign of momentum for the deal with Iran. Apparently, opposition to the Iran deal pretty much runs the entire spectrum of the Israeli political system. But because Netanyahu had become such a high-profile and extremely vocal critic of the deal, his defeat would be seen as a, you know, removing a potential impediment. Everybody on the left in the United States was vehemently anti-Bibi. And you could just tell in the coverage last night, they were so certain they were going to get rid of him. They were so certain this was the end of Bibi. This was almost like midterm elections to them. They are bitter. They are angry. I still await the congratulatory message from President Obama to Prime Minister Netanyahu. Has it come yet? You would like to think that it would now clear Netanyahu is still going to be prime minister of Israel for the next 2 years, for the remainder of Obama's presidency, that President Obama would have the maturity and the wisdom to say, okay, it's time to bury the hatchet. Let's have a sit down. Let's work things out. Let's try to clear the air. Let's try to rebuild a partnership for the next couple of years. I don't think that's a very likely scenario. One of the things that's kind of fascinating is after each one of these defeats, we see Obama not do that outstretched hand, not make that sense of, okay, this has been a rebuke to me. I'm going to have to, you know, readjust my strategy on this. It always comes back with more defiance. It always comes back with more, you know, increasingly petty trolling in your face. You know, there's never any, you know, concession from that side. I'm not expecting dramatic improvement in U.S.-Israeli relations, but I think that it's just deeply satisfying to see Jeremy Byrd and the rest of the Obama crew try to sway an Israeli election. And, you know, as somebody put it, battleground Israel worked about as well as battleground Texas.
Very, very good. Yes, I'm sure Obama was listening most carefully to the people who didn't vote yesterday.
There you go. Yes.
But there weren't that many of them. So
no.
Turns out it was a pretty good turnout yesterday. Okay, on to the second martini. I think you could definitely spin this as good or bad. The news yesterday afternoon was that Illinois Republican Congressman Aaron Schock was resigning effective the end of the month. He's a young guy, only 33 years old, was 27 years old in 2008 when he was elected to the House of Representatives to replace Ray LaHood. He was seen as this young, telegenic guy, future of the party. And then over the last couple of months, I guess it is, all these reports of let's just say, less than wise use of taxpayer money came out. He spent thousands of dollars redecorating his office to make it look like the set from Downton Abbey. There were all these shady trips and how they were financed. And then the coup de grace seems to be this political report that suggests that Aaron Schock billed the taxpayers effectively for well over 100,000 miles that he spent traveling around his district. But he just turned in the car he claimed he did all that traveling in to a dealership that registered the car with only 80,000 miles on it. So he clearly bilked the taxpayers out of a lot of money there. No official explanation from him, but it's clear that this is just mounting up. Jim, the good news is that we don't like to see any crooks in office. The bad news is that somebody with a lot of potential, it seemed at one time, crashed and burned big time for the Republicans.
Yeah, and I think we can still say largely unrealized potential. Look, when you have a very young, very telegenic congressman show up on Capitol Hill, I remember TMZ was starting to follow him around or something. It looked like there was some sort of like bizarre celebrity vibe that he was giving off, and like, okay, this could be interesting, this could be useful. Let's see what he does with it. Other than things like this, for example, in this podcast, we probably have mentioned Aaron Schock other than that celebrity context. Secondly, maybe just one of the grand, wonderful things about having yourself kind of centered or having things, you know, if you had said to Mrs. Corumbus, honey, I want to decorate the entire Radio America studio like Downton Abbey.
She would probably like that, actually.
She might. Okay, I'm going to use all of the studio money to redesign it as Downton Abbey. I'm not sure. Like, that's a good idea. There's no one around Aaron Schock, personally or professionally, who could say, you know, that's really not a good idea. Or if you want to do it to spend out of your money out of your own pocket, go right ahead. But using taxpayer dollars to completely redecorate your office is not good. Yes, congressional offices get a certain amount of money to buy furniture and, you know, the basics and stuff like that. But you're not supposed to look really fancy and spectacular and all that. We don't have an aristocratic class. And oh, by the way, when you literally are modeling your office off the home decorations of the aristocratic class, you really play into a certain narrative of being out of touch with the common people, things like that. And when they ask, how will it play in Peoria? We mean literally, because district includes Peoria. So really just a spectacularly bad judgment there. This is a bad martini, but I guess the good martini is house cleaning, right? Addition by subtraction. This guy was becoming a problem, living a rather almost ostentatiously wealthy lifestyle on a public servant's salary, and it just is a bad sign. So good riddance, Aaron Schock. A lot of wasted talent there, it seems.
Yeah, and the good news in the wake of this is it's very much a Republican-leaning district, so there shouldn't be too much trouble for the GOP to hold the seat, and hopefully they can do a little better job vetting this time. All right, on to the crazy martini now, and we've spent a lot of time with Scott Walker in the good martini, but he's in the crazy today, and not for a good reason. Walker is obviously putting a lot of his chips on Iowa to get off to a great start in the 2016 presidential campaign. One of the hires he made recently was Republican activist and political campaign consultant Liz Mayer to run his online operations. I know she's a friend of yours, Jim. Eric Erickson just has written very highly of her, especially in relation to this story. He has basically forced her to resign now because the Iowa Republican Party is not at all happy with her. Some conservatives don't like her because she was for the Gang of Eight bill, she's for gay marriage, and she's pro-choice. But the thing that really got her in trouble with the Iowa GOP is her comments from the Freedom Summit a few weeks back, where she said, in other news, I see Iowa is once again embarrassing itself in the GOP this morning. Thanks, guys. She later tweeted, the sooner we remove Iowa's front-running status, the better off American politics and policy will be. Jim, the hire was made after those tweets. So if Walker's got a problem with those comments, they should have come up long before he hired her. And now it looks like he's just bending to the will of a few activists in a state that I know you believe holds itself a little too highly in its place in American politics.
Oh, where to begin, Greg? Well, first, this is where I should say the kind of, you know, the standard disclaimer. I describe Liz Mayer as a friendly acquaintance. We've probably only met face to face like a half dozen times. We've chatted in the past, I think, pretty highly of her. But more importantly, pop quiz, Greg, who won the Iowa caucus last year or last cycle?
It's officially undetermined, but most people say now Rick Santorum.
You've got it, because they couldn't count the votes correctly. And they end up destroying the ballots before they do it. There are a lot of reasons that people are wary and tired and just kind of exhausted and just, you know, don't want to see Iowa get to clear half the field this time around.
there is a demographic of people who would applaud Liz Mayer's comments about the Iowa caucus. That demographic is every voter in the 49 other states, okay? The rest of us are tired with you corn farmers getting to pick the presidents this time, all right? What do you make your decision on? Ethanol subsidies, who your pastor told you to vote for. And then the next question is, well, I met this guy only four times at the diner, but I only met this guy three times. Meanwhile, those of us in Virginia are like, are we going to have a primary? Or are they going to do it by convention? Right? I mean, the rest of us are sick and tired of this. And so when Liz Mayer comes out and says something that's very common, I'm not saying Iowa Republicans have to like it, but you have to live with it. Because you cannot say we're going to punish any lawmaker who dares have anyone on their staff who dares speak ill of the Iowa caucuses. Because you know what, Iowa caucus goers? The rest of us hate you, okay? Oh, you're jealous of us. Well, yes, we're jealous of the fact that you get to have an enormous voice in the process and the rest of us don't. And we see no logic to this. It's not like you're the most representative state. It's not like you're the biggest state. It's not like you're the most important state. And oh, by the way, in the last 30 years, Greg, how many times has Iowa voted for the Republican candidate?
George W. Bush, 2004.
And that's it since in the last 30 years.
Wow.
This is a very Democratic state. Right? Let's stop fooling ourselves. This is not, you know, it is also an extraordinarily socially conservative state. And this is why you always have guys like Santorum and Huckabee way vastly overperforming here. The other problem I have is, look, a problem with a caucus is what guys do is that sometimes they literally move there. I think that was Chris Dodd's approach back in 2008. Yes. I'm going to visit all 99 counties. Now, look, on the one hand, yeah, that's great. On the other hand, you can't do that in every other state. You cannot personally, you know, we are a nation of 317 or so million people. You cannot go out and personally meet all those people. So what happens is a Huckabee, a Santorum, John Edwards a couple years earlier, you end up doing a personal style of campaigning that works there and then doesn't translate to New Hampshire or South Carolina or Florida or any of these other states. It's just a skewing, unrepresentative, unique set of circumstances. And the rest of us are tired of by the time they get to New Hampshire, like half the field is gone. All because of these, you know, of these folks in Iowa and about 12,000 people making their decisions. First thing is to do the Ames straw poll and knock out folks like Tim Pawlenty. All right. You know, here's the thing. Whether you love Tim Pawlenty or hate him, the fact that he got knocked out because not enough people ate his barbecue in the summer of 2011 is an astonishing, like, it's an indictment of our system of democracy. This is a stupid way to pick presidents. All right. There's that, was it from one of the Monty Python songs about Monty Python movies about Excalibur? It says, strange women lying in ponds are no way to select a leader. Well, the Iowa caucus makes even less sense than a strange woman lying in a pond giving a magic sword to our leader. So that is my stinging indictment. I realize there's a warrant for my arrest in Iowa for having the audacity to speak ill of it. But the rest of us are really getting tired of it. And oh, by the way, Scott Walker, you do not look good for knuckling under and throwing Liz Mayer to the wolves at the first opportunity. If you can stand up to the unions in Wisconsin, you've got to be able to stand up to some whining in Iowa and rent.
Jim, that was two thoughts. Obviously, you're going to need protective detail if you do go cover the Iowa caucuses. And secondly, for the day after St. Patrick's Day, to have that passionate and lucid of an argument, I'm very impressed by you.
Oh, you should have heard me last night. But you know.
Oh, very good. Jim, we'll do it again tomorrow. Talk to you then.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.